you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
This is off the record, by the way, Tony. This can't be on the record.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Got for you.
What are you guys talking about?
None of your goddamn business, Rob. How's the car?
Car's fine. They left me a nice little orange paper gift on the windshield in addition to it, though. That's nice.
You got a ticket as well as getting towed?
Yeah. I'm like, can't you just make it all one charge? Like, you got to make me think I'm out of the woods? And then leave a ticket, too.
Oh, everybody's got to
get what's the total damage? Like, let me guess, like close to 300, right?
275, and then I had to Uber downtown, which is tough.
Brutal, dude. Sorry.
We got you.
And the other thing is the impound is like under a bridge.
Yeah.
You got to walk through like a construction site. So I didn't know where I was going.
And, oh, you've never been to Lower Wacker like that?
Well, I've never been to like that specific place, and it's like in a trailer type deal. So I was like, how many Wackers do y'all have? Like, I'm like walking up and down the road. Like, but no, once I actually got my head on straight, it was pretty quick. It's just
it's an awful place to go to because everybody in that bitch is mad. In there, like, they hired people who didn't want the job. You know what I'm saying? Like, apparently there were CEO and CO opportunities, and these people got dropped in the Lower Wacker toe pound, and they hate it.
I walk in, I'm trying to be like self-deprecating, like, oh man, I couldn't find it. Nah.
That ain't gonna work. You got the wrong crowd playing. hey, Tone, like, so some overworked auntie saw Rob coming and is like, nah, Seinfeld, you leave that shit over there. Oh shit. Speaking of overworked, look at this dude.
Overworked.
There he is.
Probably overpaid.
Nah, don't say that. You work for Siri. What's happening, bro? How you feeling?
Oh, man, I feel old.
Man, who you telling? Candace Parker coming back to Chicago, and I used to book her when she was 15.
Damn.
Yeah, exactly.
Damn.
That's the correct response.
Wow.
So we just start recording on this podcast, bro. So
yeah, that works.
Yeah, we don't really do the whole intro thing.
It's fine with me.
Yeah. Because at this point, we're tired of being outshined by our guests.
That's not going to happen today, I'll tell you that.
All right, Zach. So I got to ask you, because I listened to you and Amin and everybody on SiriusXM NBA Radio doing a great job, by the way.
Thank you.
And when I do hear you guys talk about the Bulls, it's usually in the same tense that everybody else does nationally, where it's like, oh, the Bulls, you know.
Right.
We should care about them, but we don't have to. What do you think is important for not just this year, but whatever this Bulls thing is going to be with this new front office, obviously new coach? What do you think is important, not just winning wise, but for national relevancy? Because, you know, Zach LaVine is a guy that people are starting to take a look at because of the eye popping numbers. And of course, Kobe had the season last year, this year, trying to figure out the point guard position. But like, what's next for the Bulls if this thing goes right on a national scale in terms of relevance?
I think the trouble for like kind of the outsider looking in national perspective with the Bulls is just like what's the plan, right? Like, what's the plan? Like, is it Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, Kobe White? Here we go. I'm like, okay, that's like, I've seen worse plans before, but that doesn't exactly like inspire a bunch of like confidence in terms of, yeah, that can be a title relevant team in the future. And so I like all those players. I just don't know where I like them in the hierarchy of a good team. And I don't know that we've seen enough I guess maybe we've seen enough from Zach at this point because he's been in the league for a minute, but I don't know that we've seen totally enough from a lot of those guys to be like, yep, that's a number two on this. This guy's a backup point guard, or it's a starting point guard or whatever, right? Like, I don't really know what that is, but I think that's the tricky thing for our tourists and Billy moving forward is just what is this? Like, you've inherited this. So one, what is this? Two, how do we make it better? And if we can't make it better to the point where like, yes, this is our core, then like, all right, how do we get out of this? Right? Because that's like with Washington, you're seeing like, uh-oh, we got to trade Brad pretty soon because he is visibly like upset. He's a meme every single night, right?
Yeah, every game every he looks game. Like a boxer who's ready to retire.
Yeah, every game he's like, I got another round with Mike Tyson? What? No, I gotta get let myself get knocked out. And so, but once they move Beal, like, yeah, they'll get a lot of nice pieces. But then it's like, okay, so now we got Russ and what, right? And so I think for the Bulls, it's avoiding looking like that. Like, they don't look like that. I don't want to say, like, they're right. In the Wizards position. They're in a much more advantageous position. But I don't know what that looks like moving forward. And that's going to be the tricky part of knowing when do we punt on this? How do we add to it? Is there a player that you can just outright bring into it? Because I think, like, the national perspective is all agreed on this. The league is better when the Bulls are good, the Knicks are good, the Lakers are good, right? Like, you need these, like, the Celtics are good, right? Like, you need these franchises, these iconic franchises to be good. It hasn't really happened unless the greatest player of all time is involved, right? And then maybe, like, a couple years of Derrick Rose until he got hurt. But, like, other than that, like, it's pretty rough.
And intensifying that point, Zach, is that we don't know how Arturis thinks or right. works as a lead executive, because he's never done it before. I mean, you can parse together breadcrumbs from his time in Houston or Denver or what have you, more impactfully in Denver because he's number two there and obviously had a significant role in some of those draft picks. But we've never seen Arturis in this lead executiveship role. So, you know, I agree with you that it's like, what are they going to be? You know, Arturis is on the record as saying this is mostly going to be a season of evaluation. However, you know, once that evaluation process ends, what does he do then? Clearly, he has opinions about this roster.
Right.
And clearly, he has plans on what he wants to do in the future. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how he executes those because we've never seen him in this role before.
And I think a good example of that, just to look at a different team, is Gerson Rosas in Minnesota, right? Where it's like, yo, this guy is the next executive. Everyone wants to hire him. And then he gets there. And I don't know if he's done a good or a bad job yet, because he inherits historically like maybe the biggest mess in NBA history with what the Wolves franchise is, right? Like, that team has been relevant maybe 4 years in their existence. And that's probably being generous. And so he comes in and he's got to make trades. He's got to make picks and all this stuff and clean up what's there. And they don't look any farther along couple years into his reign than before. And so if you're Arturis, like, how do you avoid it looking like that, where it actually looks like you're taking steps back? And it's okay to take steps back as long as you see that clear vision in the future of like, we got to take a step back here to take two steps forward here. But with this Bulls team, I don't know how that looks yet.
Yeah. Well, the bright side for the Bulls, though, is unlike the Wizards, you know, you're not saddled with that long-term kind of albatross of a contract immediately. Timberwolves, you could even argue, too, like the moves you make last year to pick up a D'Lo. It's like, man, is he the number two guy there? And you give up that pick that is now so coveted and is obviously in Golden State now. The bright side is there's probably a little bit of flexibility there if you're Arturis. But the awkward part, I think, for the players, for the people in the organization, for the fan base, from a local perspective, is like this core – that Zach, you're 100% right. Like, it's not on a path to being championship level at all. Like, nobody would say that, but there are these kind of like emotional connections, fan base to player wise. There are players that believe that they should be around long-term. Like, we saw that with Lauri Markkanen in the offseason, really badly wanted a long-term extension, but it's kind of like the reality is you're not proven to that level yet. So it's going to get sticky. It's going to get awkward on a trade deadline offseason. But I think if they were in a situation Minnesota's in this time next year, like, people be pissed. Like, there's no, like,
and I think you should, no doubt, right? Like, you, yeah. Like, one, you never want to be Minnesota. that's for, like, historically, you never want to be Minnesota. But two, like, you know, to your point, like, there's a lot of like I like the idea of Patrick Williams. Well, and it's too young to, it's too early to judge him, but like, all right, I'm like, you can sell me on that. I like the idea of Wendell Carter Jr. I like the idea of Laurie Markkanen. I like the idea of Kobe White and Zach LaVine. I just don't know if I like them all together. And I don't even know if I like three of them together. Like, that's the tricky part, right? I like the ideas on like all these individual moves, but when you put it into this one painting, I'm like, I don't know if I would buy that.
Yeah, and Bulls fans have had to wean themselves off of drugs that made them feel good but wouldn't yield results before, right?
Like, right.
It was no bigger fan while getting a chance to cover him of Ben Gordon than me. But I also understood that at some point, if that's a steady diet, then you're going to starve some nights, right? Or when we talk about playoff success, because he definitely, you know, Ben ignited this fan base and this
for sure. Yeah, he was good.
In a real way.
Yeah.
Leading the league in fourth quarter scoring as a second year player is not something that you could smirk at. But you mentioned those pieces, Zach and Lowry and Zach and Kobe. And I was trying to think about it because in the terms of coaching, like Lowry and Zach haven't really worked much together. And that's why I thought last year was such a waste of a season, because I thought, you know, it'd be my first chance to cover this team in this capacity, that I was going to see a lot more two-man game with a team that didn't have its sights on winning. And to me, that season got wasted. And now you've got a second year and you're getting close enough to having to pay both of these guys where you don't understand how they really get into it. So how much of that, you know, how much of that do you see around the league where it's like, if there's not a coaching tweak, because I think Billy Donovan is obviously different than Jim Boylan, and you see that manifesting itself this year. But how much do you see around the league where you and Amin or anybody that you chop it up basketball-wise about, like, if there was this slight coaching tweak, or if there was this thing that seems obvious but us as basketball dummies aren't getting, how much of that do you see around the league, or is this just a zoom in, you know, in town focus kind of vibe?
No, I mean, I think you see that with a lot of the bad to mediocre teams, right? Like with Cleveland's situation, JB Bickerstaff's doing a good job this season, right? Like that team is way more competitive. Colin Sexton looks amazing. They just pick up Jared Allen. Like Darius Garland looks so much better than he did his rookie year. Like you see a lot of that. I'm like, okay, I didn't see the vision before the season, but now
Rob's the resident Cleveland guy. So
okay,
yeah, I've been on that. They laughed at me. They laughed at me at the beginning of the season.
I would have laughed at you too, but like now I'm like, okay, I get it a little bit more now, right? And I wonder, is that JB? Is that player development? And if they had a better coach than JB, like if like Alvin Gentry was in there, right? How would we feel about this Cavs team? Maybe that's not even fair to throw that on JB because he just took over that team, and that franchise also historically a mess, right? Mm-hmm. I think with New Orleans, we had that question of like, okay, Alvin's a good coach. Stan Van Gundy's supposed to be a better coach. Right. How is that supposed to look? And so far, not great. Right. Like, I think there are a bunch of teams in there where I think Orlando might be the opposite. I think Charlotte might be the opposite, where you look at those two teams. I'm like, I think those coaches are propping up like kind of a bad roster. Like, I think
the coach of the year leaders to me, Zach, are all people with under 500 records right now.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Like, we're going to look at some point, some people are like, shouldn't Frank Vogel be in the conversation? Like, maybe, but like, this team sucks and they're winning. Yeah. Like, I don't know what to do with that. Right. I think you could look at Washington and like, if they didn't have Scott Brooks in there, if they had a better coach in there, would that have done something? You see that with New York, like that team should not be competitive the way they are. That team should not be defending with that roster, right? They're defending with like Elfrid Payton and Mitchell Robinson and Julius Randle. I'm sorry, that's not a top five defense makeup right there. But Tom Thibodeau is coaching his ass off right now. Like he just is. And I don't know if it's sustainable, but like you look at those situations, Minnesota, you could say, hey, Ryan Saunders, like good young coaching idea. It hasn't worked. If you bring in a better coach, does that change the culture enough to embrace what Gerson Rosas is trying to do? Like, I think that that's always the question. I think that's why coaches are so replaceable or seemingly replaceable in this league. And it's the easiest thing to replace because one, there's no cap on what you pay a coach, right? Like that doesn't count towards the salary cap. So there's no, other than paying two coaches at once, there's no penalty for firing a coach. And two, you can always convince yourself if you're the GM. Now it's not the roster I put together. It's the coach trying to coach them up. Like that's the problem. I can change out that guy and keep my job. Like, so yeah, I think you see a lot of the struggling teams, that coaching decision becomes like pretty impressive and pretty important.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Cause then you look at the Bulls and it's like, it's almost the inverse of what you'd expect. Like the keepers are the front office structure and the coach. Like that's what you started with. And right now, for now, the buck has pretty much all been passed off onto the roster, and it should be because it's pretty much the same roster as last year, other than Patrick Williams, who I think, you know, if we were going to talk, and this is a conversation I've been wanting to have for a while, but it's early in the season, of like who the keepers are, in our opinion, on the Bulls roster right now. It's really Patrick Williams, it's Zach LaVine,
right,
and it's purgatory other than that. So it's really a really interesting rebuild kind of launch pad that they have when you consider the context there.
It might just be one of those guys, right? Because,
yeah,
you know,
it might be none of them. It might be nobody, right? Like
it's Pat, though. I think it's Patrick Williams, just because
that's their guy.
Yeah, it's the first one.
Sure.
Right? For Billy and for AK and KC and I and Rob have talked about this as well. Like Zach LaVine, trying to figure out how not just nationally people feel about Zach LaVine, but this front office, right? Like we last pod we went over Zach's usage rates and his turnovers, and you know him getting 28 a game, and hearing Billy Donovan pretty much say, you know, him getting 25 a game is not the part that we need to worry about anymore.
Right. It's
the refinement of those winning time situations, you know, practice situations turning into game situations. So you know, Zach hasn't had a point guard right since Ricky Rubio.
Yeah.
Two, you know, he's going into his seventh season. But it seems as if we still look at Zach and treat Zach like he's a third or fourth year player. So there's an intersection there that Zach is, I think, battling against where it comes to expectations as opposed to what you already should be.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's the tough thing. Is like, Jason, I think you know, like, I love Gunners, right? Like, Gunners are my favorite. I just want to see scoring. Like, yeah, the defense is nice and everything. I don't care. I just want to see some fun shot making. Like that's like ultimately, yes, I care about good basketball, but sometimes I'm just like, yeah, I like hero ball. That's fun to me. He hits that shot, like we're going crazy.
Hero ball is awesome until they miss the shot.
Until they miss the shot, right. Jason Tatum taking all these step back threes from 30 feet, and people are like, that's a bad shot. I'm like, yeah, but if he had hit it, that'd been cool. Like that'd been a great moment, right? Like I'm in on that. And so Zach LaVine is my kind of player. I love Zach. Like I think he's a great dude. I think he's a great player, talent wise. But would I want him as a one or two on my team? I don't know. Like that's probably not. I like watching him. I don't know if I would want to like saddle my resume to like saying, yes, he is one of my top guys, even though I think he's crazy talented, because that's just hard. And I'm actually curious for you guys, like it's early, but so far the Billy Donovan era is like, hey, the offense is pretty solid and the defense is terrible. Which as opposed to last season, I think the numbers were a little skewed, but like last season, at least the defense was pretty solid and the offense was terrible. And I wonder which seems more promising to you, because I think it's easy to talk yourself into the points and obviously the personality. Like, I don't think Billy Donovan's thrown up, but did he really have a punch clock? Really have that?
No, Jim
Boyle, I'm saying Boyle. Like, did he really have that? Cause like, obviously it's a very different personality, but like, that can't be a real thing.
KC, you got to take that one.
Hey, that's an Athletic exclusive. Your employer, man. That's a Darnell Mayberry. Darnell got the tour of an area they haven't considered that I have never even seen. So,
oh man,
that was an Athletic exclusive. But there's
make sure you subscribe.
Darnell, hey, there you go. I'm letting you plug your place. Darnell took a picture of it on his phone. So yeah,
that's insane to me. But, so obviously, the personality of Billy against Jim is very improved for that team and the psyche of that culture. But like, I wonder what you want to talk yourself. Is it easier to teach a team how to score? Is it easier to teach a team how to defend? Maybe it's not easy to teach either.
Well, I would say I would opine that obviously we're in an era of offensive basketball, number one. You do still need to defend to win championships, but the Bulls are not at a championship level. So the fact that the offense is making the improvements that it is, and to me, they're sustainable regardless of personnel somewhat because of the style that Billy is playing and the style and the philosophy that Arturis is espousing. So I think that's probably more promising. I also think the defense of numbers, which have been egregiously bad, are compromised by the number of live ball turnovers the Bulls give up, which is number one in the league. So That's an aspect to it. So baby steps here. Bulls are not competing for championships, which is what you need to when you're defending at a high level, that leads to championships. So the fact that that they've made such a jump offensively, particularly when the defense last year was a little bit gimmicky and skewed to the personnel of guys like Chris Dunn and Shaq Harrison, who are no longer here. So I think I'm a glass half full kind of guy in the sense that right now, the fact the offense is taking this much of a jump and to me looks sustainable regardless of personnel, is probably a promising thing for the Billy Donovan, Arturas Karnišovas era.
And I'll tell you which one is more fun to watch as someone that's watching all of these right every single night and then again the morning after.
Log, man. Last year was
rough.
Yes. And the other thing with defense, Casey, you hit it on the head. It was a little gimmicky and it was a little personnel based. You lose a guy like Chris Dunn. Obviously, in a vacuum, Chris Dunn isn't the difference between a 13th ranked defense and a 28th ranked defense, like not on his own. But when you consider kind of the style shift, that was somewhat to be expected. Like, we knew this wasn't going to be the personnel of a team that was going to defend at that level this year, especially starting all the young guys. Like, on opening night, their starting lineup, the average age was under 22. And, we know about the back. I mean, we knew coming into the year the backcourt was going to have questions defensively. Those have borne out completely. Although Zach, on ball has certainly the effort is there and he's gotten a little bit better. But, on the long view, the defensive rating is there for a reason. And then the thing is, like Casey, you said the offensive stuff is a little independent of personnel. I think on defense, obviously it's been bad, but we can't really act like this is the core moving forward, as we've kind of talked about. So I'm not ready to say that like Billy Donovan defenses are going to be bad for the rest of the time that he's the Bulls coach, because we just don't know what the roster is going to look like in the future. Maybe it's a little bit more tailored personnel wise, or as Patrick Williams, maybe he turns into a stopper as he gets a couple more years under his belt.
Yeah, I mean,
things like that.
I don't think a lot of this is on Billy. I think a lot of this is on the dudes wearing the jerseys. Like,
100%.
Like, honestly, if you run around the way they ran around against the Charlotte Hornets, because the Charlotte Hornets played 30% zone. And then you run into the Milwaukee Bucks and the Lakers and the Clippers and your offense can't move the way you wanted to. And defensively, you're getting ran through. I mean, some of this, I think, is an experience and toughness factor, too. Right. Like if the drop zone coverage that they've been employing, if it's not on the guard, because Billy's not calling out guards, if you're hearing it, if it's on the bigs and they keep doing it and you got two, mid to early 20s bigs, like, these are the reasons why they're not going to be able to defend right now. And on top of it, I just don't know who the dude is that anybody can look at on this team and not say my bad to at this moment in time. You know, there's certain guys that you just can't say my bad to over and over, or there's going to be an issue. And I don't know who. I mean, Otto, Thad, and Garrett are the dudes that I presume are the leaders on this team. And all three of them got here within the last 2 years or so.
Right. So they're all playing low 20s minutes a night on average, low to mid 20s, because they're coming off the bench. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. So these lumps that you're going to have to take, individually, does Daniel Gafford change shots at the rim? Sure. Is Wendell Carter Jr. a good defender? Sure. Does Kobe, does he give the effort? Sure. Does Zach give the effort? Sure. But in the end, if it keeps happening, it's because there's a lack of resistance for some reason. And if Billy Donovan is out here trying to figure out what his team needs to look like, and AK is looking at it and saying who needs to be on this team, it's incumbent upon these dudes to show that they can play the defense. Or, like, I feel like if we watch these next, 17 games in 31 days, are you going to find out who's doing what right and who's doing what wrong? The Bulls have gotten off the last week and a half or so, and because of COVID protocols and all these other things, where you can have this practice time. I want to see what's going to happen when you can't practice because of maintenance days, because that's getting ready to happen here. And a lot of these young dudes are going to start to feel the real NBA experience. Like, there was a story where, Pat Williams had never been on a training table before, and all of a sudden he's got a quad contusion. Like, these are, we're going to find out who can play professional defense here soon. I wouldn't put it on Billy and just as yet. I think last year, obviously, the gimmicky stuff was, noted. But when it comes down to just guarding your man, they perform differently due to resistance levels. Whereas I think that you should perform the same way and let talent bear that fruit. I think this team, when they see a team that's experienced, veteran, and also knows their plays, they run into some issues that carry over onto the defensive end, Zach.
Yeah, and I think you see an example of that in New York, right? Tom Thibodeau in Minnesota, it was like, oh, maybe he can't coach defense in the modern era anymore. And then he gets to New York, it's like, oh, no, maybe it's just those dudes in Minnesota couldn't defend anybody and didn't want to, right? Great. Like, that's, and it's a small sample, but I think for Billy that, this is an interesting time in taking over this team, because, and I think some people will look at this as kind of a derogatory comment, but I don't mean it this way. Like, I think it's legitimately, like, there's some coaches who are stepping stone coaches, right? There's some coaches that are there to get you from a bad place to a promising place and a promising slash good place. And then you may need another coach to bring you up to championship contention, right? You Mark Jackson in Golden State. Good stepping stone coach for that group. Got them playing defense, got them figuring some things out. Steve Kerr comes in, gets a little luck, and boom, all of a sudden ruined the NBA, right? Like I think Billy wasn't right, especially his first real job in the NBA wasn't right coaching a Thunder team that was competing for a title. But you look at him with some of the development stuff, you look at him with the young guys, that looked pretty good in OKC, especially last year. Like, they looked pretty good in OKC, and obviously Chris Paul was a huge part of that. But I think Billy's a good coach for this type of group of players in this type of building stage.
All right, so we're gonna let you rock because we know you got to go. We appreciate you, and happy birthday, by the way, bro.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
Happy birthday, man, because, you know, and especially in these times, everyone that we see is a cherished one. So happy birthday to you. But what right now, as we let you go, what interests you that you don't talk about enough in the NBA scene?
The NBA scene, what interests me? I would say I think the way we kind of make excuses for certain stars, or like hammer down on certain stars, right? Like, I think we're making a lot of excuses for a Bradley Beal that we wouldn't afford a Russell Westbrook or a Kyrie Irving. And obviously they're all different players and different dispositions or something like that. And I'm not even saying we shouldn't make these excuses for Bradley Beal. I think he's in a terrible situation. I think it would behoove him to trade out. Like, I think we look at certain things, certain young guys of like Andrew Wiggins, right? Andrew Wiggins, Minnesota, we're like, he's a lost cause. He's got no chance. Like, oh my God, what a waste of money. And yeah, he's overpaid, but now he's in a decent organization and it looks like, oh, maybe it is promising. He's not going to justify 30 a year, but he can play more towards that contract than he would have Minnesota. And for that, for a guy like Andrew Wiggins, when he was 23 and we're like, well, he's already 23 years old, with other guys, we're like, he's only 23. How much better could he get? And it's just interesting to me how we hold certain guys to different standards in terms of like their age, their experience. And especially, I think we've learned this so much over the last couple of decades, of the organization you get drafted to, that matters, right? That really, really matters more than just about anything from a player development standpoint and how good a player wants to be, is teaching them how to do the right things. With this Bulls group, I don't think they were being taught the right things the last couple of years. And now Billy has a chance to do that. And you just wonder, is it too late? Is it right on time? What does that look like? And so I think for me, how I try to be good about that, but I fall into the same pitfall as everyone else. It's like, you kind of like who you like and you don't like who you don't like, and you will make excuses to try to save your opinions from looking completely stupid. And that's one thing I've learned, is like, I can't stop myself from sounding stupid. It's just going to happen. And I'm always now I feel like 90% of the time I am 100% aware of just how stupid I am. Amen. And that's all you can ask for in this business.
It's a beautiful thing when you have that kind of freedom of knowing that you're going to say something dumb. Continue to speak, baby.
Just keep rolling with the punch. As long as those checks keep coming in, you can keep saying stupid stuff. When the checks start, you know, stop coming in, and you say, oh, maybe I should try to be smarter about this.
Hey, if me saying that I thought Jimmy Fredette would end up being an all-star hasn't gotten me.
You want to talk bad comparisons? I thought he was going to be the next Ben Gordon. I tried to make a cross-racial comparison. You're not allowed to do that. I didn't know. I didn't know.
This is why
I'm like, oh, yeah, it's Ben Gordon, 2.0.
This is why I love you, Zach. This is why I love you. Appreciate you, man. Thanks,
you so guys.
Much. Happy birthday, brother.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for coming on, Zach. Appreciate it.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
All right, boys, we can get back to what we normally do. I guess we got about another 15 minutes or so in us now that Zach has filled up that time. Yeah, man, I not having a game this week.
This is the third week in a row we've been doing this, the no game this week
these
podcast.
I can only imagine what this feels like for these dudes who spent 9 months not getting a chance to play basketball with each other. And in 3 weeks, they have to hit pause two different times. And I understand, you know, we're living in a terrible, terrible time right now. And, you know, this thing is getting closer and closer to home. But 17 games in 31 days has been chronicled. That's getting ready to come up. Hopefully they get all those games in, but what are you guys looking to learn about this team over that haul? Because I really think that, you know, some of these weeks are going to have to be looked at as educational weeks, right? Like we as fans and observers all look at things. All right, so you went 2-1 that week, or you went 3-1 that week, whatever the case may be. But big picture, with no practice time coming up here, and these dudes playing amidst COVID and, you know, new rotations and injuries that will normally happen during an NBA season still having to be dealt with, what are you guys looking to learn about this team as we go week to week here over this next month with all the games jam-packed together like they will be?
Well, I'm going to be watching you make a good point about the lack of practice time. So I'm going to be watching the young players in particular, mostly Kobe and Patrick. And here's why. Billy Donovan, to me, has made it pretty clear that he's not going to extend those veterans' minutes. Like he thinks that keep preserving Otto and Thad. Yep. And now he's actually even bringing in he said it's important to keep those guys right from a leadership standpoint. So he doesn't want to overtax them physically, not only because he doesn't think that, you know, he wants to make sure that their production level stays high by playing them in those low 20s, but also wants to make sure they're healthy on a leader from a leadership front. So it's clear that he's not going to sacrifice development just to maybe play those guys extra minutes for the sake of maybe winning or improving, you know, the on-court product. So 17 games in 31 days, first of all, is no joke for anybody. Second of all, lack of practice time, you're going to really have to hone in on film study, recovery, things like that. So, you know, Patrick's hit a little bit of a lull here, and I'm not picking on the guy. He's 19. He's handled a lot that's been thrown at him. Kobe's hit a little bit of a lull here. What do those guys have in this important stretch when you're not practicing as much and a lot of responsibility is going to be falling on you if the veterans aren't going to be extended? So I'm going to be watching those two players in particular pretty closely.
Yeah, to me, it's the young guys. And when you say the young guys, it's basically just the starting lineup. Like you said, Casey, like this isn't going to get shuffled around that much. I think the last three games where it's been kind of Daniel Gafford as the nominal starter, 15 minutes, and then you rotate in Thad, Lowry, and at the five, Otto at the four. And then when you have a guy like Otto, 17 and 31, like there's going to be second legs of back-to-backs in there that he's not going to be available, things like that. So, yeah, I mean, the young guys, I think, Casey, you're 100% right to hone in on Kobe and Patrick because of the struggles those two have had lately. Kobe, I think has been more extreme than Pat just because it's been going on really since that Kings game where he had the 36-7. It's been a pretty rough go of it. So those two guys, and really just, and maybe we can segue this into talking about the Wendell injury, but just, you know, how much is the defense going to slip even if it can slip even further without him? And just kind of how do guys rally to fill that hole? Because that's a really, really tough loss when you talk about the subtle things from screen setting to defensive rotations to he was finding his footing offensively with seven straight, you know, double figure scoring outputs before he got hurt. Like Wendell Carter Jr., I thought was really finding his footing on both ends of the floor before he got hurt. And now those are shoes that are going to need to be filled by committee on the roster. And I think, you know, it's just going to be interesting to see how that adjustment happens. I think honestly, obviously it screws with the evaluation of a lot of these guys too. And as we were just talking about with Zach, the evaluation of them as a group, because that's really what this season is about, as has been said a bunch of times. So it screws with that, but there is a level of kind of adversity overcoming aspect to it that will be instructive just to see how guys rally and respond.
Offensively, I think Wendell's his loss, I think, shouldn't be understated. Like we think of Wendell as the defensive guy, but you know, Wendell is a markedly better passer in the high post when it comes to him or Daniel Gafford, right? Wendell, if he doesn't have a layup, can do several things. Now, Wendell doing it with conviction and confidence is one thing, but his ability to do several different things. I'm still waiting for Daniel Gafford, if he has to go through somebody, to not have to go through somebody, right? Like, waiting for him to get that left hook or that right jump hook right, where he's 6 feet away from the basket and still feels comfortable. So I think when we look at Wendell and Daniel, it's like, oh, one guy can run and jump and dunk and the other guy can't. So defensively, you shouldn't have that much of a drop off. For me, it's not defensively. And on top of that, it is defensively because of the fouling, right? Like, you got to be out there changing. We saw it in the Lakers game. It changed the rotation entirely. All of a sudden, Lowry Markin was doing something that he wasn't planning on doing maybe until the fourth quarter, when you were planning on giving Anthony Davis a different look if you were still close. But by that point, foul trouble had happened. Lowry Markin had to be on Anthony Davis for a lot more of that game probably than they wanted to. So I think Wendell, offensively, what he does for the team can't be understated. And no, it's not the points per game, but it's actually the pass before the pass that gets you an open look, whereas the tough shots that have to be made. Like, people think that they can zone the Bulls when Daniel Gafford is on the floor. And that's because if he does pop to that high post, he's not as good a passer. His vision, he's never had to swing the ball, right? He's never had to move the ball right to left to compromise the zone. He's always been the guy at Arkansas where you just gave me the ball and I'm going to go do what I have to do with it because I'm better than everybody on the floor. So I think viewing it through the lens of the ups and downs that we have this entire season, where it's like, oh my God, they got blown out those first two games. Oh, they're looking okay. Oh, they're turning over the ball again. Oh, they won three games in a row. I think this is going to be what this season is. They're going to win more games than I thought they would win. But at the same time, I think the development is more important than any of the wins or losses that matter on this squad.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny you bring up Gafford because, you know, there's that little social media stir of start Daniel Gafford when Wendell was off to that slow start, and Gafford had a couple of games where he had some highlight blocks and alley-oops and stuff like that. Here's my thing about Gafford, and I'm not discrediting the guy. I mean, not all second-round picks even make a roster, and he's carved out a niche for himself. But my thing about Gafford is, when you put him in a role like he's going to need to be put in now, some things you start getting exposed. And I couldn't agree with you more. Wendell, you know, with that pick and roll chemistry he'd form with Zach and the short roll and then making the right read and spraying it out, if not to the direct three-pointer, as you mentioned, then making the hockey assist or creating a good shot with his passing recognition. I think his passing recognition this season has been fantastic. So Gafford doesn't have that in his toolbox. He just doesn't. And so I think Billy's going to be attacking it the right way, because I think Gafford's going to still be kind of in that nominal starter role and still playing that 15 to 18 minute playing time allotment. But there's going to be a lot on his plate with Wendell out for 4 weeks, and I'm curious to see how he responds to it.
And a lot on Zach's plate too, because we've seen kind of when teams want to bring that double team or bring that trap to Zach to have that release valve rolling. That's where a lot of that pick and roll chemistry came from. Had to have that in a guy like Wendell. I think that showed up a lot on the West Coast trip. And then you have a guy like Thad, who's averaging like 3.5 assists a game this year too. It has been great playmaking in that pocket. You know, to not be able to have one of those two on the floor pretty much for an entire game, it's going to strain the offense. Obviously the defensive impact is huge, but you guys are totally right to pinpoint that on the offensive end too.
Yeah. And Tony, you know, Tony threw it in the chat, and I'm not ignoring it, Tony. I see it. Zach as an all-star, you know, some days I'm about like, oh yeah, that'd be cool. And then other days I'm like, man, what the fuck are we doing? Like, Zach as an all-star is a great individual accomplishment, but we're not Sacramento, man. Like, we, you know, all-stars games for teams, for players on teams that are losing, is to me, the individual gets to celebrate it. But, you know, I mean, you know, it's like, I don't watch the Grammys and I don't watch the Oscars. You know why? Because I don't need anyone to award the art that I appreciate. So if I like, sometimes I get a referral, right? Sometimes like, oh, okay, I should go watch Spotlight. Watch Spotlight, I'm like, that was a tremendous movie. Sometimes I get a referral, I'm like, I probably wouldn't have caught this anyway, so thanks for nothing. But in the end, if Zach LaVine is an all-star, it's a recognition from the league that he is one of the best players halfway through a season. But to me, if this team is winning more and Zach LaVine's numbers decline a little bit and he's still an all-star, that's the win, That's the win. Right now, people who don't watch Zach LaVine see Zach LaVine's numbers and go, we got to get him off that team. When, in all actuality, if you probably talk to Zach himself, he'll tell you he's part of these losses. He has told Billy Donovan, yo, I want to be coached. You know, like get on me. And Billy Donovan has done that. And until we start to see some other parts of it, like being an all-star is cool. I can't wait till Zach LaVine is an elite player. Whatever that looks like, right? Because Damian Lillard was bumping his head for a few years in Portland because of what was happening with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. And, you know, Russell Westbrook was getting triple doubles in OKC. So he couldn't break that backcourt, you know, all-star status. And then he did. And now, do you feel differently about Dame Lillard's game? Because I don't. I've always thought he was a star. So some days when it comes to Zach, I'm, yeah, all-star, do your thing. But then some days I'm like, you know what? If Zach gets better as a player and isn't an all-star, I'm fine with it. I know he probably won't be, but I'm fine with it. So I don't know how you guys feel about Zach as an all-star. And by the way, I don't even know right now when the all-star game is supposed to happen. If it's not happening, people are talking about putting together a virtual game. Like the all-star game, right, significance-wise right now for me isn't much. And I don't mean to rain on your midway through the year parade, but how you guys feel on the Zach LaVine as an all-star conversation?
Yeah, well, just on the all-star point in general, you're right. It's a midseason award. It's generally a popularity contest, although they've weighted the votes to kind of offset a little bit with fans versus media versus versus current player vote, things like that. But to your point, like, you know, when we're really weighing career accolades, you know, I personally would take something like All-NBA much more, that has a lot more gravity to it than necessarily an all-star berth. But I wanted to read this quote to your point on if you ask Zach, like, kind of what would he be prioritizing? At this point, he was actually asked about this.
I was going to read that quote, but go ahead. What did you say? I was going to read that quote, but go ahead. I already pulled it up.
I beat you to it. He was asked about this yesterday after practice.
Dueling journals here, trying to race to a quote. I love it. All the nerds listening right now are like, yeah! Including me, because I'm a nerd.
Journalist off. But Zach was asked about this after practice yesterday. What would it mean to play an all-star game? Because the news of, like, the voting schedule had just broken out or whatever. He said, it would mean a lot. It's just, I understand. I feel like I've been playing at an all-star level the last couple of years. I'm all about winning right now. I think that would take care of everything. I would much rather be on a winning team and make it to the playoffs than any individual accolade. But once you start getting to that level, everything comes with it. So I understand who I am and what I am, and everything will fall into place once we start winning. So to your point, Jason, on if you talk to Zach himself, like, what would he say about it? That's exactly what he would say about it, which is that individual improvement and how that contributes in the context of winning, that is what matters to this guy at this point. He's 25 years old, is in the seventh year of his career, hasn't done a lot of winning, is with a coach now that you can kind of see it, you know, potentially, like, it could come together down the line. And, you know, he's talked about that, personally as a goal, you know, making an all-star team would be great. Maybe there's a little less gravity to it this year because we don't know if there's even going to be a game or whatever. But certainly his sights right now are more on the winning aspects than anything. Like, that's clear. And, you know, I think anybody, any observer would tell you that. And then you hear it from his mouth. It's the exact same thing.
All right. That wraps it up. I appreciate you guys, Rob, Casey, Tony, as always. And before we let you go, I'm going to let everybody else know that I'm going to say a couple of words about a guy that we lost in the NBA community, Sekou Smith. This is a dude who, before I got down to Atlanta, way, way, way before, I run into in NBA circles, and, you know, he was a guy who was on NBA TV, and I was a guy who watched a lot of NBA TV. And I'll never forget when Shaq didn't know who Sekou Smith was, and he started making fun of him because Sekou's resting face is what it is. And Shaq started messing around, making fun of him on the air once. And everybody kind of was like, mm-mm, you don't do that with him. Like, that's an OG right there. And that was at a very young age. Sekou was he was a dude who always had time for you, and I appreciated that about him. He came on shows that he didn't have to come on. Like, I'm talking about late at night in Atlanta, before Atlanta, when I was a part-time host, when I was a full-time host here in Chicago. He's never not been there when I asked him to be there, and he never had to be. And that's what I appreciated about him. As we grew, and as I grew more comfortable talking to him about life and work because of what the situation down in Atlanta had become for me. It was hard. It was many times when I didn't think I was going to be able to make it. And, you know, we obviously see what happened, but Sekou Smith was the reason why I didn't do a lot of dumb things to my career. And he always had a measured response. He always kept me level-headed. And more importantly, he was talking to me about being a father far before I had kids. And if anybody who's been around me, all I've ever wanted to do in my life was be a good dad. And he laid some of that foundation. I hope one day I can make him proud in that respect, but he's going to be missed. And as you can see, from Jemele Hill to Vinnie Goodwill and everyone in between, Mark Spears, the NBA community lost a really, really important man. And it has very little to do with basketball. Lang Whitaker and Jared Greenberg and guys like that who had a chance to work with him and know him and love him at NBA TV. My heart goes out to them. And most importantly, my heart goes out to his wife, Heather, and his three kids because they shared a wonderful dude with us for a very long time. And even when he was sick, you know, it's kind of like you don't know how a person wants to talk about it or how a person wants to carry it. So you let them mention it. It would only be in passing. And he would always make it the conversation about me or how my kid was doing or what's going on with me, the ups and the downs. Like he's known about some things that have happened in my personal life that a lot of people don't know. And it's because I trusted him with it and I trusted him to give me the right advice. So we gonna miss you, brother. And yeah, man, take care of each other because this disease is taking a lot of people who should be here and continue to be here. So for Sekou Smith, he meant a lot to me and I didn't even know him as well as a lot of people did. So we're gonna miss you and rest in peace and condolences to his family and friends. That's all I got, fellas.
That was well said. Thanks, man.
All right.